From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Rafael, California.
I'm from San Jose,
Hayward, California.
Nopa.
Kind of lower Russian Hill.
I live across from El Matate in San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll find out what it will take to put a dent in the drought.
When you're in a drought, you can't be choosy as to what form your precipitation takes. We'll take anything that's wet.
Then we'll check out the water level at a local reservoir.
We're half full or we're half empty. It depends how optimistic you want to be.
And we hear about some of the ways San Francisco was reusing its water.
So our wastewater is all of the water that's generated in our buildings from our toilets, our urinals, our kitchen sinks, our bathroom sinks, and our showers.
The yucky water.
The wastewater.
Testing the waters today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. California is entering its fourth year of drought, and it's really starting to show in some of the state's most vital resources. The Central Valley Project, which supplies water for about a third of California's farmland, recently announced it had no water to give. That means those farmers will have to seek water elsewhere or let fields go fallow. About 6% of available farmland went unplanted last year because of the drought, resulting in more than $1 billion of lost revenue. The dire situation has left farmers and regular folks alike wondering when it's going to end. KALW's Audrey Dilling has been looking into how much water it would take to get us out of this drought. She joins me in studio to talk about what she's learned. Hey, Audrey.
Hi.
So what is it going to take?
Well, it's really hard to say. NASA recently released a study saying it would take 11 trillion gallons to get back to normal water levels in the state. That's about the same amount of water that pours over Niagara Falls in half a year.
Whoa.
Yeah. But that 11 trillion number goes way beyond what it would take to fill reservoirs. It's how much less water we have than usual all around this state. So that takes into account things like how much less snow we've got in the mountains or how much drier the soil is.
So let's stick with the reservoirs for a minute. How much water have we got left there?
Right now, the state's two biggest reservoirs, Lake Shasta and Lake Oroville, are around half full. Both those reservoirs feed into the Delta, which supplies about 23 million people in the state with water, plus farmlands. In an average year, those reservoirs hover around three-quarters full. So we don't need them to be filled to the brim, but that's still quite a difference.
So what would it take to get back to normal?
Good question. I talked to Janine Jones with the California Department of Water Resources for the answer. And here's an interesting fact she shared with me.
Generally, what's important to keep in mind is that a relatively small number of storms, let's say less than 10 storms, amount to the statewide water budget for the year, so to speak. And the absence of a couple of those storms or a big difference in their size really determines if we're wet or we're dry.
Okay, so we just had about two or three major storms in the past few months, and she just said we need around 10.
Right. And like she said, each one of those storms is really important. It's kind of like taking a class where your grade is based on 10 assignments. If you're not going to do all those assignments, you better plan on doing great on the ones that you do hand in.
Mm.
So like even if we got an A on those few storms we did have, if we don't have any more, we're going to fail at solving the drought this year.
Okay. But we're kind of running out of time, right?
Right. To go back to that grade analogy, the storms that come in December through February, a period that some people used to call winter, are weighted more heavily. They're the most important. Jones says we typically get half our yearly water supply in that time. So those storms we got, they were a lot warmer than usual. And here's why that matters.
Because those storms were so warm, we did not accumulate snowpack. And we've been having record warm temperatures throughout the winter months, which actually are melting snowpack prematurely. So we don't have a lot of water in the bank, so to speak.
So did those storms actually hurt us by melting snow?
That's a good question. That's what I wanted to know. And here's what Jones said.
Well, certainly they helped. And, you know, when you're in a drought, you can't be choosy as to what form your precipitation takes. We'll take anything that's wet, in essence. But our whole system of reservoirs and water infrastructure is really designed to work on the normal cycle in which you accumulate a lot of snowpack during the winter. And then as you get into the spring months, that snowpack melts, fills reservoirs, and can be allocated for water supply purposes.
Again, that's Janine Jones from the California Department of Water Resources. Okay, Audrey, so we're past the peak rainy season, but let's just say we do manage to get those reservoirs filled up this year. Would that be the end of the drought?
Well, of course, no one can say for sure. But Jones says, based on the research she's seen, predictions for how California's climate will change in the next half century say it's actually going to get a whole lot wetter here. So that sounds like a good thing, more rain. But it's also going to be warmer, which brings back the problem of less snowpack. And if our whole water storage system depends on having snow that melts gradually over the summer, we're going to have to think about a better system, one that's based on storing more water that's falling as rain.
That's KALW's Audrey Dilling. You can find more of her reporting on water at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents.
She took all my money and my best friend. You know the story. Here it comes again. I have no pride. I have no shame. You gotta make it rain. Make it rain.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Turning on your faucet may be easy, but the process of getting that water to you is anything but. Water has a long journey to get to your tap, often starting in the mountains, traveling through aqueducts, and stopping over in reservoirs along the way. These reservoirs that hold our life-giving drinking water can sometimes take on a life of their own, supporting whole ecosystems of animals and plants. KALW's Todd Whitney visited one such reservoir in the East Bay Hills and brings back this story.
So I just pulled off of San Pablo Reservoir Road in the hills of El Sobrante. It's easy to miss that there's an actual reservoir down here, one that gives the road its name. But once I actually do see it, it's all sorts of pretty. San Pablo Reservoir is idyllic. It almost looks like that generic postcard. You know, the one with the mountain reflected in the lake. The water's calm, the hills around it are rolling, and the sky is a pristine shade of blue.
Oh, it's utterly stunning here at San Pablo. It's actually one of the gems in our system, we like to say, here in the East Bay.
That's Abby Figueroa, spokeswoman for East Bay Municipal Utility District. But we're just going to stick to EB Mud. The system she's talking about is a complex network of pipes and tubes that brings water to about 1.3 million folks out in the East Bay. And along the way, the water stops in one of three main reservoirs.
So a reservoir is a place where you hold water. It can either be a place where we have dammed off one side of it, say in a canyon, and that's where you naturally hold water. Or it could be a tank, a steel tank up in the hillsides.
The San Pablo Reservoir is actually all natural. That means that there was already water here when EB Mud first took it over.
So here at San Pablo, the water comes from two places. One, it's either local rainfall.
So it's sort of like a tributary type thing?
Yes, yeah. So all throughout these hillsides around us, there are small creeks. So when it rains and after the ground has saturated, the water will run down the hillsides into the reservoir. Or it's water that came through our aqueduct from the Sierras. Those aqueducts run 90 miles from the Sierras here to the East Bay.
And those aqueducts are not like the Roman aqueducts, right?
No, these are very large pipelines, 6-7 feet in diameter.
San Pablo's small peanuts compared to the upcountry reservoirs EB Mud manages.
San Pablo is where we store about 5% of our water that we supply to the East Bay. So this reservoir, at maximum capacity, holds about 40,000 acre feet.
Hold up. What's an acre foot?
1 acre foot is an acre of land filled with water 1 foot high.
All right, cool. But how much water is that?
3 households will use about 1 acre foot of water in a year. So if this reservoir was at maximum capacity, you would probably be able to serve water to about 120,000 households in a year with what it holds.
But it's nowhere near 120,000 households right now.
Like I said, we are currently, as of this morning, 55% full. We're half full or we're half empty. It depends how optimistic you want to be.
Cool, I'm glad you made the joke, so I didn't have to. San Pablo is low because of the drought. We just haven't gotten the rain to fill it all up, which matters to more than people. There's a lot of animals out here that call this place home. Frogs, rodents, fish, and it looks like geese or ducks. Whatever it is out here, they leave a lot of their droppings. But Figueroa says that the water is safe. At least it will be by the time it reaches your tap.
once we decide that we need the water would be treated and then put into the system where it goes to your tap.
San Pablo Reservoir is open to the public. Even though it looks like a beach, there's absolutely no swimming allowed. But there's other stuff to do.
The public can come and take advantage of the picnicking, the trails, the fishing available.
There's also hiking and boating. But Lord knows what you would do if you actually fell into the water. Figueroa says if you're caught swimming, you'd be strongly admonished to not do that again.
Tiny little dock, and then the recreation area, the snack bar.
Yeah, like I said, you can just come out here and kick it at the reservoir. This is going to become the party spot.
Actually, we really do like it when folks come out here, because the more that you appreciate this area, then the more likely you are going to appreciate where your water comes from.
For Cross Currents, I'm Todd Whitney.
We in the water. We in the water. Children, we in the water. God's gonna trouble the water.
While some of the water that we use comes from beautiful places like the reservoir, other water comes from, well, other places, like our toilets. I wanted to find out more, so I headed over to San Francisco's Public Utilities Commission, the PUC, to learn more about the city's water. The PUC is right near City Hall on Polk Street, and along the outer perimeter of the building, there are these rectangular planters with beautiful green plants growing in them. You may have walked by them, and you'd never think that garden is irrigated by reused wastewater. Wastewater is toilet water, urinal water, bathroom sink water. Water you flush down the bathroom pipes comes down and waters these plants. And that's just the beginning of a life cycle of toilet water. At the PUC, I met Paula Kehoe, the Director of Water Resources, and she walked me through how it works.
So what just happened?
So that...
It is okay to laugh. This is funny.
So that was the toilet flushing, which we're very proud of because we're using recycled water and we've been able to save over 1.5 million gallons of potable drinking water, and we use recycled water instead to flush our toilets.
So here on the sidewalk, we are treating wastewater. These plants, as you can tell, love the water. They're very healthy. They are a variety of water plants. We have calla lilies here. We have other plants from the fern family. A variety of plants that love water and love nutrient-rich water.
They look happy.
We can walk along here. We're actually following the path of the treatment of the water right now as we walk down the sidewalk. It takes about 48 hours from once the water leaves the toilets and the urinals and the other fixtures to go through the living machine and back up into our toilets. Now we're walking actually into the building. We're in the lobby of the building where we have a cafe. And to my right is the last wetland cell within the living machine. As you can see, there's a number of plants inside the building. So we're creating green plants in our interior lobby. And as you turn around, you can see a number of people enjoying our cafe adjacent to our on-site water treatment system. So we started on Golden Gate Avenue, and we walked to Polk, and we took a right and walked down Polk Street, and then we took came into the building, and now we're in the foyer of the building. So there's three separate wetland cell areas, and we are at the end of the wetland treatment. Now we're heading into the basement of the building. Noisy! The water comes down here for its last stage of treatment, which is disinfection, and we do that through ultraviolet light and chlorine, and then that water, is after it runs through the UV and chlorine, it goes into the pipe back up into the toilets and urinals throughout the building.
Back up the stairs from the basement to the final destination of the water, the bathroom.
And here we are.
Let's get another flush. Don't tell anyone. That's enough. We don't want to waste any more, right?
That's right. We don't want to waste any water.
That's Paula Kehoe, Director of Water Resources at the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission.
I think I should wash my hands.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's Audiograph's Julie Kane.
Since today's show is all about water, we decided to play you a sound that some of you have heard us play before.
I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry lands, I should walk faster, the dry lands, springs of water.
Is this a rerun of the water temple out in Sunol? I think this is a rerun. Julie?
That's our Audiograph superfan, Glenn. And Glenn, you are right. We did first play that for you back in 2013. That was after a listener called in and told me about a place that's a shrine to the water we drink. So I went to visit, and I met someone who told me all about it.
My name is Betsy Rhodes. I work with the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission out here in the Sunol Valley, and we are standing in front of the Sunol Water Temple. It's a classic Roman-style, Greek and Roman-style temple. It was actually built to imitate the Temple of Vesta in Italy. It was constructed in 1910. There's an inscription on the top of the temple that I forget, but it's from the Bible.
Can we walk around and will you read it to me as we go?
So it was, I will make the wilderness a pool, as I'm reading around the top of the inscriptions here of the Corinthian columns, and the dry lands, I should walk faster, the dry lands, springs of water. The water temple was constructed by Spring Valley Water Company, which was the predecessor to the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. And it was built upon the confluence of three historic water sources for our customers back then in 1910 to commemorate the higher purpose of water delivery. So what once was a shack is now this gorgeous water temple that really looks like it's straight out of, you know, ancient Greece and Rome.
What is the higher purpose of water delivery?
I guess from my perspective, it's that people can turn on their taps and they get their water, and that it's there when they need it.
And how is this water connected to Hetch Hetchy?
It is connected to Hetch. Well, not these literal waters, but this system is part of the Hetch Hetchy regional water system. If you're a drop of water, let's say, and you're in Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, you go down a complex system of pipelines and tunnels, and you travel across, literally across the state of California, until you hit a portal in the Sunol Valley over there where it officially enters the Bay Area, and then it passes underneath Sunol Valley. And, by the way, the cool thing is this was built, the system, Hetch Hetchy system was built in the, you know, 20s and 30s. Water goes from Hetch Hetchy Reservoir to the peninsula using only gravity. No pumping. It's pretty amazing that they were able to accomplish that feat.
This is so fascinating.
Isn't it fun?
And what I really love, too, is that, so I'm here because a listener called me and said, you know, a sound that you should go out and record is a sound at the water temple. And that is why, that gives us this way to learn all of this information, just basic information about how the water comes out of your tap.
And about watersheds and the importance of water and the importance of, you know, preserving our natural resources. It's all tied up into one, really.
That was Betsy Rhodes of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. Now, a lot of you recognize the sound for the Sunol Water Temple. Our winner this week is Jeff Gilman. Congratulations! We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt, and those t-shirts are really cool.
This is Doug Carlson. I'm an Audiograph winner from a couple of weeks ago. I got my t-shirt, and it is swell.
End of message.
For the rest of you, we would love to hear from you. Do you have ideas for where we should record? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. I can't wait to hear from you. Thanks for listening, thanks for calling, and thanks for playing.
I'm Julie Kane.
You can also email us at news@kalw.org. We love hearing from you, so catch up with us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio.
Bury me deep in the still blue water. Let me rest.
Our team includes Leela Day, Sandhya Dirks, Chris Hoff, Hannah Kingsley Ma, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Raja Shah, Judy Silber, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. The line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Tune into Cross Currents Monday at 5. We'll head to an empty lot in East Oakland that's become a battleground in the fight over the city's living wage law.
We want to make sure that the city of Oakland is not handing out exemptions and waivers like candy. And when violations of the minimum wage come up, we want to make sure that the city takes those violations seriously and investigates those complaints of noncompliance seriously.
What Oakland's new minimum wage law really means. Monday at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News. This music is by San Francisco band Hoxton Mob. They play the Great American Music Hall tomorrow night, opening for the Shams. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
You say you're leaving, but I see that you haven't left yet. And I stop believing in half of what you haven't said yet. You've been looking out the windows of our house. You've been trying to see right through me. You say you've seen me, you know that I've been gone. Say nothing, 'cause nothing's what I've done wrong till now. You've been looking out the windows of our house. You've been trying to see right through me, right through me. And I know you've been stepping out.
Tune into Cross Currents weekdays at 5. We've got action.
He's hoisted up by his ankles and hung upside down from a building.
Suspense.
I don't know if you heard that, but we actually just heard a smoke detector battery beep.
Romance.
Jerry, who I've been hanging out with, is my lover.
And style.
The key to his outfit is a pair of homemade AstroTurf armbands.
Kind of like so. That's my trademark, is the AstroTurf.
Not enough? We've also got penguins, politicians.
Don't be economic, girly man.
Medical mysteries.
You would give me a pat on my belly?
Yeah, you know, protect those ovaries.
And of course, music.
Music?
Music.
Music.
Where's the music?
All that in one show. It's Cross Currents, weekdays at 5 on KALW.